back for another edition of the SAFTAcast. It's yours truly, Scott C. I never knew how much that muddy water meant to me. Folks, a little self-promotion to kick us off today. Did you know that the SAFTAcast has a Twitter account? We do indeed. We have a Twitter account, and our name on Twitter, our handle, is SAFTAcast. That is at SAFTAcast. I know it's not very original, but it's the easiest way of finding us on there. There you can find information about upcoming promos, shows, etc. that we release every Tuesday. You can get the latest on the info and to be the prior to release knowledge, but you also find knowledge about us here at the SAFTAcast via the weird little thoughts that pop into my brain and come out because I'm the writer on that one, and, you know, an effort to entertain you. You can also find information about Sundress Publications at Sundress Pub, also on the Twitter. You know, you can check out our feed for free, give a little taste of it on the SAFTAcast.com website, but we encourage you on Twitter, if you're on Twitter as well, to give us a follow and such. We'd appreciate it. All right, self-promotion over with. Let's talk about Sundress Publications for a moment. Let's talk about the Sundress Academy for the Arts, because there are two events coming up. Two events coming up that will blow your mind. Prepare yourself right now for your cerebellum to be exploded across the room in goo and just gray matter everywhere. All right, you ready for this? All right, I don't know if you're ready. All right, you got like a shovel and a plastic bag nearby? Good, because here we go. Couple days from now, Sunday, June 8th at 3 p.m. at the Birdhouse in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let me say that again. Sunday, June 8th. Sunday, June 8th. See, I'm trying to bore that into your skull. Sunday, June 8th at 3 p.m. The Birdhouse in Knoxville, Tennessee. If you are within a 2 to 3 hour radius of Knoxville, I want you to clear your schedule for Sunday afternoon. I want you to just, like, cancel all your plans. I don't care if you have a family reunion or if you've got a dentist appointment, though I don't know why a dentist would be open on a Sunday afternoon. It doesn't matter. Maybe it's emergency dental. Cancel that emergency dental appointment. Cancel that dog grooming appointment. Cancel that whatever. I want you to cancel and clear your calendar right after this episode finishes, because Sunday, June 8th at the Birdhouse in Knoxville, Tennessee, it is the Sundress Academy Reading Series Return. And folks, let me tell you, the lineup on this one is amazing. It is the southern launch of the anthology, St. Peter's B-List, Contemporary Poems Inspired by the Saints, available from Ave Maria Press. SAFTA is helping to launch it, the southern release of it. And here are your readers. Here are your readers in lineup. Get a load of this. Joseph Bethanti, Poet Laureate of North Carolina. Kevin Brown, Professor at Lee University and Poet. Aaron Elizabeth Smith, the head honcho here at Sundress Publications. It is going to be amazing. They're going to be reading their work from the anthology, but they'll also be reading other work as well. That is Sunday, June 8th, the Birdhouse in Knoxville, Tennessee. Then just a few days later, I've been talking about this one for the last couple episodes. I'm going to tell you one more time. June 13th through the 15th at Firefly Farms in Karnes, Tennessee, just on the outskirts of Knoxville, at the home of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. It is the inaugural undergraduate writing retreat, a 3-day, 2-night camping trip and poetry workshop. It is going to be amazing. It is seriously going to be amazing. If you are an undergraduate poet, or you're not necessarily an undergraduate anymore, but you're still looking to maybe go into an MFA program or an MA program down the line, let the people at Sundress help you with your poetry, with the application process. We're not going to fill out your applications, but we'll help you, guide you toward programs that we think might fit you and everything like that. If you or you know somebody who might be interested in this, go on to Facebook, do a little search for the Sundress Academy for the Arts. You will find all of the info there. I will tell you right now, wait a second. June 13th through the 15th, camping trip that begins on Friday the 13th. Kind of glad that one of the guests that's not signed up is Kane Hodder. I'm glad he's not going to be there, or anybody named Voorhees for that matter. I'll be a guest. I'll be there indeed. I will be in attendance, but I will not be leading the workshop by any means. This is going to be led by the poets, the ladies of Sundress, T.A. Noonan, Rhonda Lott, and Aaron Elizabeth Smith of the E. Smith Band. Folks, their space is limited. There are very few slots left. So get yours today. Go on the Book of the Face. Check out Sundress Academy for the Arts. Do a little search for them. Learn about them and learn about upcoming events as well. Be in the know and in the knowledge. You know, I just mentioned the E. Smith Band because I was thinking of the E. Street Band because I was thinking of our guests today. Dan Crocker has to be one of the biggest Bruce Springsteen fans I know. Now, I can't recall if we talked that much in this episode about his love of the Springsteen and such, but I do know that we talk about a number of awesome topics, and that's because Dan Crocker is one cool motherfucker. I have known this this author, poet, writer, fantastic guy for a number of years now, and it was really awesome to have him on here. He is also a Sundress author, and his latest volume, Like a Fish, is available on the Sundress store. If you go to sundresspublications.com, go to the store, you can find Like a Fish, and that is the volume that contains his now kind of legendary and famous poem, Sestina McRib. Yes, it's a Sestina, and it's about the McRib sandwich. To give you an idea of what this man is like, let's go to the interview. But first, we gotta have a little bit of theme music. Rocker, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. Hey, man, okay. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Enjoying this nice, lovely eve here as we were talking late at night.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's quite sweaty down here where I am, though. It's probably not sweaty where you are.
No, it was actually pretty nice today after a long, cold winter, but I think it's going to get cold again in a few days. So.
Of course, it could be sweaty where you are. I have no idea what you do at home in your private life. For all I know, you could.
It doesn't take much for me to get sweaty anymore. So.
when you you just throw on the heater, a couple blankets, I don't know how it is when you get older, the sweating. I don't know. Anyway, so what's up, man?
Oh, not a lot. Not a lot.
What was that? I didn't hear you.
Not a lot.
Oh. Tell me though, you told me before we went on the air that you're listening to a little Warren G and Nate Dogg though.
Yeah, I've been on an old school rap kick today.
No, I totally understand that. I've been listening to some myself. Actually, a lot of Tupac recently for some reason. I've been on him kicking it.
Oh, yeah, that's good stuff.
I think it's because recently, in one of my classes, I was teaching Nikki Giovanni. And so naturally it comes up that, she's connected to Tupac because you got to somehow connect with your students. So we started talking about that, and I got to bust out my knowledge of old school hip hop on my kids.
Nice. Did they know who you were talking about?
They did, kind of, sort of. I was really surprised. They look at me, though, because here I am. I don't look like a person who would listen to hip-hop. I hate to get stereotypical here, but I don't look like it necessarily. And yet, yeah. Because I just love music, I can just bust out and go, no. There's a reason why Afrika Bambaataa is so important to hip-hop in the early 80s and electro-funk.
Oh, yeah, I'm the same way. I just love music. It doesn't matter what kind it is as long as it's good. I had a class one time. No one in the class had heard, and this was recently, no one in the class had heard of Public Enemy. I just wanted to lay down and die.
That's surprising. I use Public Enemy, actually, every time I talk about poetry, when I talk about meter and such. The two best to use are the Beastie Boys and Public Enemy to explain meter.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
If you want to know about IMs and everything, you go right to the Beastie Boys and fight for your right to party.
Yeah.
It's perfect iambic. If you look at, so your mom threw away your best porno mag. It's all about where they accented. I'm not even giving it justice here.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good idea. I might use that when I'm teaching meter.
I could hook you up with people who are much smarter about meter than me. That's always been one of my faults about poetry. I suck. No, seriously. And then if you want to go Public Enemy, Bring the Noise is written in the same meter as Homeric Epic Poetry.
Oh, really?
Almost the whole way through. Most of it's done in the same as the Iliad. Whatever that's called. It's something, I think it's hexameter or something. Didact, I don't know. Meter was not my strong suit.
It makes sense. I consider Chuck D a poet, so.
Oh, I do too. Definitely, he's up there. I think you get more mileage out of him than someone like Jay Kwan. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think it's really, would you agree it goes the same with every genre though?
What do you mean?
That you have some artists you can get a lot of mileage out about talking about their lyrics as poetry, but others you just can't.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I think that, the music has a lot to do with. A lot of songs, I really like the lyrics. But then if you read them without the music and try to picture them without music, they're just fall kind of flat. There's very few out there, I think, that write lyrics that work just as well with if you just read them and never heard the song. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like who? Who do you think would work in that way?
Wow. Well, people say Bob Dylan, but I'm not 100% sold on that.
Maybe a few of his songs, yes, but not maybe his whole catalog by any means.
Yeah. Leonard Cohen, I think, but he was originally a poet, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So that makes sense. Yeah, his lyrics are great. A few songs by Nick Cave.
I can see Nick Cave, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Chuck D,
we'll put him on the list.
Even my all-time favorite singer-songwriter is Bruce Springsteen. I probably wouldn't even put him on the list.
Why not? Because, I mean, there's a couple songs of his that I think could almost be argued as great poetry.
What ones are you thinking about?
I'm thinking Thunder Road right off the bat.
Oh, well, Thunder Road is my all-time favorite song.
Maybe The River as a track.
The River, yeah, I can see The River. Thunder Road maybe too. I think I'm just I love that song so much I just can't even separate it anymore.
Maybe not.
Lyrics, yeah.
I think families are torn apart, really. It comes down to, when it comes to Bruce Springsteen, it comes down to Born to Run versus Thunder Road.
Yeah, yeah.
I think families are torn apart by that debate.
I think so, too. It's probably especially in New Jersey.
I fall on the Thunder Road side, though. There's something about it that I'm not taking away. Born to Run is a great track. But something in Thunder Road appeals to me more. I don't know.
It does me too. Thunder Road is like the story of every young kid from Leadwood that ever wanted to get out of Leadwood.
So I can see that.
I don't know really what your childhood was like because I know nothing about any place outside of Missouri. So, mm-hmm.
So you're from Leadwood, Missouri, then?
Yeah. Yes, it's less than 1,000 people. It's a town like that. I was actually founded by a lead mining company.
Makes sense, then.
Yeah, it used to be an old lead mining town.
Hear that or some blues singer, you know. Hi, I'm Leadwood. This is my town. Okay, fine, you take it.
The mines closed, and they left us with a town that has soil that is 10,000 times higher than what the FDA considers safe.
What?
Yes,
Like, safe from lead poisoning, or...?
Yes, yeah. We even had Erin Brockovich here a few years ago. She gave a nice speech, then nothing happened. The lead mining companies now say they can't afford to clean it up, so I don't know.
No, I relate to you. I'm from upstate New York, and we had the IBM plants there, because we were from the area that IBM was founded in. Mm-hmm. And when they bugged out in the mid-90s, they left behind, and they're still cleaning up the toxic waste they dumped many years ago at the Glendale plants.
Yeah.
Sure it's not as bad, though, I'm sure, as Leadwood, what you're saying. But.
Well, no, I'm sure it is. It's just all over the country. Corporations come in and ravage a town and the people, and we welcome them because people need jobs, and then they leave and leave their mess with them, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. You know, we had surprising, nothing severe. I don't remember in terms of health problems, but there was a spike in cancer and a number of other disorders.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The cancer rates around here are super high. Suicide rates are super high. I mean, we're just breathing in lead constantly.
Mm. Does that worry you, like, for your future? Are you concerned, or did you get out feeling like I got out in time?
Well, I mean, health-wise, what can you do? I mean, it's where I grew up, so what's going to happen is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I don't hate Leadwood. I mean, it's my hometown, but it's poison. So, yeah, I worry for the people still there.
Go ahead.
People in Leadwood still love lead. I mean, it's what the town was built on. Their grandfathers worked there. And those were the good days. That's when people here had some money, had good jobs. So
it's tradition to stay then almost, follow the family footsteps in the business.
Yeah. Well, there is no business anymore. The lead mines are closed because people found out lead was dangerous. So, you know, there's not such a call for it as there used to be.
No, there really isn't. So how did you get out then? you're saying it's like 1,000 people, and it seems like one of those small towns where nobody ever leaves. So how did you get out?
I don't know. I just...
I stole a car and a shotgun, and I ran.
No, but I was probably 18. I had not been out of high school maybe 2 months. I told my parents I'm moving. I had a friend who lived in another smaller town in Missouri, but there was a college there. He was going to college. And I was like, I'm getting out of here and just going to see what happens.
So you ended up couch surfing on his place or something?
Well, not couch surfing. We were proper roommates.
Okay.
But I wore stitches for a few years. I wrote a lot of really bad stuff and then eventually decided I was going to go back to school. So I didn't have any money. I went to a community college, did well there, and I figured, well, I might as well put myself in debt and go on to state school.
Ah, the American dream.
Yep.
Papa, I don't want to work in lead. I want to work in debt.
And I will be in debt until the day I die.
Same here. And unfortunately, the thing sucks about it is that when we die, our student loans, they go on to our family.
They do?
Yes.
I did not realize that.
So let's say I died before my parents. Hoping not, you know, knock on artificial wood for this desk. Yeah, the debt falls on my parents then, or my wife.
Wow.
Yeah. At least that's how I understand it. But I know that, well, they've been talking financial aid reform for what, since like the late 90s now.
That's true. Yeah.
And I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Well, I thought that if you killed over, then that, I didn't realize, because that one hope I had for my daughter's future was that, well, at least if I die, she's not going to get my loan debts.
No, she'll be saddled with them, maybe.
Hell.
Bloody hell indeed. Now, I don't want to, yeah, especially if you're married to an academic who also has student debt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what happens then is that, you know, congratulations, now you're stuck with it as well. I mean, again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know necessarily, but that's what I remember hearing. But that was years ago.
You're probably right, because usually when it comes to money, whatever is worse for regular people is what's true.
You know, the biggest way to screw us possible, that's what you always go with the worst.
Yes.
That's why I say oftentimes, if I ever win any type of large sum in a lottery, first thing goes off is paying my debts, my student debt and everything, and to Uncle Sucker, and then I'm done.
Yeah, I can see that. So, Scott, what's going on down there in Florida? Are people crazy?
Are what? Excuse me?
Are heat crazy in Florida?
People are heat crazy. Florida gets a bad rap for all the craziness down here. You know, we are the news of the weird for America.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a reason for that, actually, and the reason is that we have very open laws on reporting people who are admitted to prisons and, you know, who are arrested. We have very open book reporting on that. So I would say we probably have the same amount of crazy as any other state. It's just that ours is more reportable.
Yeah.
So you hear more about the crazy here.
Well, yeah. In the South in general, I think. I mean, there are a lot of crazy people in the South and in Missouri, too, and that makes for a good story on the news. And
probably also makes for good writing, too, I would think.
Yeah.
No wonder so many writers come down here to Florida.
That's true.
You know, Hemingway took Key West, and there are others. Zora Neale Hurston is actually where I am, in the Treasure Coast area.
Yeah.
And that's about all I can name in Florida. Yeah, I can't think of any others. I mean, you've got Mark Twain.
We've got Mark Twain and Dan Crocker. That's it.
That's it. Well, that's a hell of a company to be with.
There's good poets from Missouri.
But that's, you know, being right up there with Twain, you know, if it's the two of you, that's good company to be a part of.
Well, for Twain, yeah, definitely. I'm with Hemingway that every great American novel is really, you can trace it back to Huckleberry Finn.
I don't know. Maybe. I could see that. But at the same time, I've never been a big fan of Huckleberry Finn. I've never been a big Twain fan in general.
You don't think he's funny?
I do, but it's like, I read him and I go, I appreciate this. I see what he's doing. This is funny. This is good. But it never grabbed me like it grabbed others. But to be fair, you know, everyone, every writer, though, I think every writer, every artist has their preferences.
Definitely.
I mean, I tell my students all the time, you don't have to like what I like, you know? It's a fun game to play with academic and English professors. What classic books do you hate? Which ones haven't you read? Etc. So let me pose that question to you. What are some of the classics that you were told to read and everything that you just could not stand?
The Wasteland.
Oof.
I think.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, and especially if you admit that as a poet, you sometimes get some really funny looks, but... When the footnotes are longer than the poem, I'm probably not interested.
Or you're reading David Foster Wallace.
True. And maybe that makes me... I don't know what that makes me sound like, but yeah. The Wasteland, most stuff by T.S. Eliot, I'm not a big fan of. I don't really care to read Shakespeare.
No, fair enough, you know. Fair enough. Me, it's Jane Austen.
Oh, yeah.
I got nothing. I like Jane Austen as a person. I like her as a writer. I just can't get into her books. I've tried. And then people are going to slap me for this one. I hope they don't slap me if they see me. I really don't like The Great Gatsby.
The Great Gatsby is a tough one.
It's a boring book in my eyes.
It's kind of boring. The Great Gatsby is a book I read, and I'm like, I'm really, really in awe of a lot of the technical stuff going on in the book.
Oh, the skill is fantastic.
But, yeah, I'm also pretty bored, and maybe it's just because it's hard for me to feel sorry for a rich person.
Maybe. I just get bored. It's a green light. Got it. There's a green light on the boat, Eric. Got it. Thank you.
It's a little heavy-handed for contemporary readers, I would say.
Although many contemporary readers are reading it now in the high schools because of the Leonardo DiCaprio movie last year.
Oh, did you see that?
No, I did not.
I didn't either. I couldn't do it.
I gave an assignment last fall to review a movie or pop culture item, and a number of them did The Great Gatsby, so I learned everything I needed to know about the film from their reviews. They all loved it.
Well, yeah.
Me, I'm sitting there going, yeah, this sounds like a lot like Baz Luhrmann. Okay, I'm going to replace the soundtrack with hip-hop. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Which, okay, fine, you do that. Except, according to my students, this is the one critique they had was, Jay-Z doesn't fit in the movie. It just doesn't fit. And I'm like, there you go! Doesn't always work.
I wanted to say real quickly about Jane Austen. Just to defend you a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just her. I mean, I think she was probably the best of the time, but it's the time period.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about people who have vague feelings and then don't do anything about them.
Okay.
That's how I can sum up that period of literature.
I could probably name a half dozen TV shows that are like that. Most of them sitcoms.
Yeah, that's true. Do you think there are any current great sitcoms like All in the Family or...
I'll tell you one. I really loved Scrubs when it was on.
Fan, yeah.
Since then, I have it in my Netflix queue, and I used to have the DVDs of all that. I got rid of them when Netflix came to town, basically. I don't watch it, though. It's like there's something about me. It's like, okay, I'm past that for now.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one that people tell me about is because they're like, oh, you're a nerd. You probably like The Big Bang Theory. And Maya Bialik saw it, and I'll be honest with you, she was a celebrity crush of mine as a teen.
Yeah.
Be honest. I tried watching a couple episodes of it, and every time I'm like, if these were real people that I knew, I would never hang out with them.
No, they're horrible people.
Exactly. There's actually, recently somebody did this on YouTube. This was brilliant. They took clips of that show and stripped the laugh track off. And when you realize, and when you listen to the dialogue without a laugh track, it's a very dark and evil, scary show.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant, man. Yeah. Do you think
there are any good ones out there?
I think there are good ones. I don't know if there are any great ones. The last great one, I think, was probably Arrested Development.
Probably. And it was so great that it couldn't last.
Yeah.
It's like, and that's the problem, I think, is that when something becomes really good critically, the public will not take to it and it will die.
That's true. Yeah.
One of the most brilliant in my eyes was the John Larroquette show in the 90s. Oh,
Yes! That was a great sitcom. No one remembers it.
No one remembers it because it constantly broke the fourth wall. It was being in these abstract directions at time, and so it got canceled pretty quickly.
But it was fantastic. I remember liking it when it was on, and then I watched it again in reruns when I was probably in my mid-20s, and I thought, this really holds up. This is a dark, funny, fantastic show, and I've not seen it since. I don't know if it's out on DVD or what. But
I don't know if it is. I haven't looked.
Yeah,
I put it up there with another great, surreal, abstract, fourth-wall-breaking show, The Gary Shandling Show.
Oh, yeah.
Which, in my opinion, was just, I didn't get it as a kid. I remember watching a couple episodes as a kid and going, this is funny, but I don't know why. Then
yeah.
I got a little older and I realized what was going on. And I'm like, this is fucking brilliant.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was a great show.
And that's the problem, is the great shows, oftentimes they're loved by critics, destroyed by the public, or vice versa.
True. Yeah.
So I don't know if there's any good ones out. I think right now the real area is serial drama.
Oh, we're in a golden era of TV for drama, I think.
Hmm. Well, that's really where I think the best writers in the country are going now out of MFA programs, like go into serial television.
Yeah.
So you put the short story writers now.
Yeah.
Are there any that you pay attention to that you're addicted to?
A ton. Breaking Bad, I loved.
Hmm.
Louis, I think, is a fantastic show.
Is that a sitcom or really a drama? It seems to be really straddling the line of both.
It does. I mean, there are some episodes where I never laugh, but I still love the episode.
Hmm.
So I don't know if I would classify it as a comedy. Although there are times it's just very loud funny.
Oh, I agree. I saw like half the first season, and then for whatever reason, I just stopped watching it on Netflix, but should pick it up again.
To me, it's like every episode is like a really well-written short story.
Mm-hmm. So
you mentioned short story writers, and it just every episode seems to have like the arc that a good short story would have.
And I think it's great when you see the serial drama, you have each episode is its own story, own chapter, but then you have the great overarching narrative of the season or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
What other ones? Are you into any of the HBO ones? They seem to be the kings of it right now.
Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones, I love.
I don't know anyone who isn't, to be honest, who watches it, except me.
Yeah. I just started watching True Detective. I think it's pretty
good. I've been hearing a lot of good buzz about that one.
It's pretty good. Whether I end up thinking it's great or not, we'll see, but I'm enjoying it right now.
Hmm.
One of my all-time favorite shows is the revamped Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, BSG, yeah. I would think that as a sci-fi nerd, I would love it more. I just haven't sat down to watch it.
I think you'd like it. It's not perfect. Season 3 is a little wobbly, but overall, a lot of critics loved it, but what a lot of fanboys disliked about it was the mixing of science and religion, which is what I liked about it. Thought it was kind of an interesting take on sci-fi.
Why was that interesting? To you, at least.
Well, for a lot of reasons, I guess. One, that we would create, that humans might create artificial intelligence that would be religious.
Huh.
Seemed interesting to me, I guess.
No, it is. When you think about it, a lot of science fiction actually tries to stay away from bringing religion into its storylines. Star Trek, no human on Earth has religion that I can think of.
That's true. And the only alien races do have religion, but the only time it was really even tackled, I guess, was in Deep Space Nine with the Bajorans and all of that.
Well, no, in Next Gen, you have the whole Klingon religion that's brought in, and Worf at one point believes that he has been visited by the Messiah of the religion, and it turns out that it's a genetic reconstruction of the Messiah that's being used as a figurehead now.
That's true. That's a good point. But didn't the Klingons rise up and kill their gods, I thought?
I don't remember the whole mythology, and I know that Trekkies are now, and Trekkers are going to come after me and like beat me up over this.
know, they're gonna be like, check memory alpha. Is it fine to share? You know, just a whole story on it. So
that's true. I mean, we might be geeky, but there are people out there, yeah.
The uber geeks, yeah.
We don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a nerd, but I draw the line at certain places. It's like, okay, here's my level of involvement, and I'm happy here. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
You know, I love Star Wars, have since I was a kid. I was, you know, I was the perfect age for Jedi. So I have my collection, I have my geekiness, but I'm not prepared to get into a fight about the expanded universe with anyone.
Yeah. I love Star Wars too, but it's so bad, right?
I got my issues with it. Yeah.
But I love it.
Oh, I do too. I love it. It's like popcorn. It's like, yeah, Harry Potter to me. I'm not saying the Harry Potter novels are bad, but they're like popcorn to me. I'll sit down and just start eating, and next thing I know, I'm through Goblet of Fire in like an hour or two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or a day, maybe. They're fun. It takes, I think, as literature people, we have to have those things in our life. Because in grad school, at least, we're pounded with all this heavy stuff.
Oh, for sure. I read so much light, bad fiction, it's unreal.
I keep the Onions collection of books. I have almost everyone. I keep them next to my bed at night. So it's like, if I'm tired, I'm just going to read a few old Onion articles from a decade ago. Brain shutdown.
I read a lot of bad fantasy. You give me a sword and a dragon, and I'm happy for a couple days. It can be as cliche. The more cliche, the better, actually.
So you go into those cheap dime store bookstores and basically and just buy them out.
Yes, yeah.
It's like, ooh, Star Trek novels I have not read. Whoosh, mine.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, mind candy for geeks, I guess.
I think there's nothing wrong with it. That's the same reason we enjoy television. Yeah, I enjoy really good story writing. You know, I love it when I'm absorbed. I loved Breaking Bad once I got into it. I love Sons of Anarchy right now, even though it's going pretty extreme now, I'm told, but I'm still a season behind, so listeners, don't start emailing me with plot spoilers, so shut up. But I love those serial dramas, but I'm also a big fan of Kitchen Nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
It's just such a shitty show, and I know that it's edited. I know all the production problems on it. I can see what's going on, but damn it, I'm addicted to it.
Yep.
You've got to have that kind of... I think it goes for music, too, circling back to music. You've got to have the intelligent, deep stuff,
mm-hmm.
and that balances out by the pop that you listen to.
I agree with that. I've seen REO Speedwagon in concert 3 times, and 3 times they rocked my socks off.
And yet you still will sit down and listen to Leonard Cohen at times and deep stuff. I totally understand.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. You know, I love great country, old country music, you know, outlaw days. And I love John Prine, Kris Kristofferson. I think those are two names we could put on the list of potentially good without the music.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But then I'll also be okay occasionally listening to, I don't know, a Toby Keith song.
I don't know if I'd go as far as Toby Keith.
Okay, fair enough. I'll take Beer for My Horses, and that's because Willie's in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think I could take Red Solo Cup. That's not even Toby Keith. Is it? I don't even know.
That's Toby Keith.
Yeah. Okay. See, I just gave up on modern country.
I have too. It's just... I mean, it's not really country, it's pop.
Country, go ahead.
I've got nothing against pop. There's a lot of pop songs I like, a lot of pop bands I like, but
mm-hmm.
it seems like everything on the radio now is pop. Country station, rap station, rock station, it's pop.
It is, it's all pop. It's pop rock, power pop, hip hop, and country pop.
Yeah.
Jazz pop. Blow pop? I don't know. I don't know. Working with that one. No, I agree. But occasionally, and some of it is catchy. Yes, I will agree. Call Me Maybe is a damn addictive song.
Yeah, I like that one.
I'll give you that, and I'll give you like Get Lucky. You know, pretty damn catchy.
Yeah.
I really got into LMFAO with their two big hits that were coming out.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with some of it, but no, I know I'll go home and listen to Marvin Gaye and I'll be happy.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's still a lot of good music being made. You just got to look for it.
Yeah, you just got to look deep into it. You got to search it out. Thank you, YouTube. You are the new Pandora.
Oh, yeah. I'll spend hours on YouTube just clicking on videos.
Oh, same here. I'll just, I've never seen this performance of this song.
Yeah.
Whoa, they actually have a recording of this? I never knew there was even a video for it. Happens with a lot of 80s one-hit wonders for me. Wow, I never knew there was a video for Animotion's Obsession. You're my obsession. What do you want me to be? Sorry.
That was a good tune.
No, it is. It's catchy. Yeah.
Oh, the 80s was a good time in music. People overlook it.
I don't know if they overlook it so much as I think it's hard to say. You know, we're just past the 80s nostalgia wave that we went through in America. The 90s one is happening now.
Yeah.
Because it's a 20-year cycle of nostalgia. So we're about to hit the grunge nostalgia, which is going to be really weird.
It is going to be weird.
Because I'm finally at that point where those were my teen years. And yeah. Now here we are in my mid-30s, and I'm going to be listening to Soundgarden again. And watching kids go, dude, these guys are so cool. I'm going to be like, I knew them when they came out with Super Unknown, so shut the hell up.
Do you still listen to grunge? Like, do you put on your Nirvana CDs, or is that a young man's music?
I still listen to Nirvana.
Do you?
I think they're still one of my favorite bands to just listen to. I can't sing the vocals anymore. My throat's shot at this point. I can't do the screaming. My hair's not long enough anymore to headbang. But there's still a part of me that hears it and feels the energy and feels the rage.
Yeah.
And so it still affects me. And I think it's also a little bit of wistful nostalgia. It does take me back to being 16 years old.
Yeah.
But I'm frightful for the new revival of it, because now I'm really going to feel old. I mean, hell, Nirvana's on classic rock stations now.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I heard Heart-Shaped Box on a classic rock station. I'm like, no, not yet. Maybe two more years. Just two more.
It's time. They're going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I know. I hope Dave Grohl inducts them, honestly.
That would be pretty cool.
That'd be hilarious. He inducts his own band.
Do you think they're actually going to play any Nirvana songs?
They will. I just don't know if they will or not. They'll probably start, at like every Hall of Fame, they'll have some tribute band or some tribute group come out, perform a little bit of their songs, or they'll bring on the band and let them do it. But I look at them now, and you know what happened to Kurt Novoselic, right?
I'm not sure.
The bass player, he is now on the city council or something like that. He went into politics.
Yeah.
And he looks very straight laced now in a suit with a healthy beard, not a grungy beard at all. And I'm just like, what? No. Brain hurting. Because I'm still picturing his lead singer standing there in a shirt that says corporate magazines still suck.
Yeah.
Or a guitar that says vandalism as beautiful as a rock in a cop's face. And meanwhile, here I've got Kurt Novoselic in a sober beard and haircut with a suit on talking politics. And I'm like, no, what happened?
Yeah.
Wouldn't be the first time, though. I'm sure you can relate. There are artists you loved who, after kind of retirement, they have changed on you in some way.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've ever been angry with them for it. I mean, people get older and they change, and that's that, you know. I mean, the beauty of those early Nirvana albums and back then is we were young and full of piss and vinegar. And
mostly piss, though.
You can't be that way forever, you know.
No, eventually you become full of vinegar, then you become full of piss again. You know,
true.
And you need a nurse to help clean it up, but what do you get, though?
Were you a Hole fan?
Not really. Never really got into them. I liked No Doubt.
Yeah.
But then they broke up and Gwen went very pop. And I missed No Doubt. I understand growth. I understand artist change. But I couldn't really get into Hollaback Girl.
Yeah.
You know, my vision of Gwen was, and I hate to pigeonhole her like this or typecast her, but I was still thinking of, you know, their mega hits and the ska mixed with punk sound that they had.
Yeah.
I know that No Doubt reunited recently, too.
They did, but not to much aplomb, I don't think.
No. Same with Soundgarden. No, not Soundgarden. I think it was Alice in Chains. Put out a new one with without Lance Stanley, obviously.
Yeah, they've got a new singer. I don't know what I think about that.
Same with Blind Melon, actually. No, not Blind Melon. Sublime.
Oh, really?
Came back. And I'm like, no. No. I mean, I heard samples of it a couple of years ago, and I was like, it's not bad, and it is Sublime, but it's not Sublime.
Yeah.
Kind of like when the Doors released two albums post-Jim Morrison. It's like, it is the Doors, but it's not the Doors.
Yeah. I hate when, you know, you got these bands and then as soon as someone dies, then a few 2 weeks later you hear one of their songs on a commercial. You're like, why did I never hear one of their songs on a commercial before? Probably because they didn't want it to be there. But now, there it is. Like, they're using Lou Reed's song for a PS4, a commercial or something now.
What?
And I'm like, oh, God.
Well, they had the incident with the Beastie Boys just a couple months ago with Goldie Blocks. Finally, they dumped that, and they went with, what did they pull on the Super Bowl? I remember hearing it and going, oh, that's smart. It was basically a pop shot at that whole incident. I forget it. I'd have to look it up.
I like the Beastie Boys stance on that, though.
What do you like about it?
Well, I mean, they've just always been adamant that they're not going to use their songs to sell anything.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. The Beatles had that same standing agreement for many, many years.
Yeah.
And then their rights got bought out by Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Who began licensing them. That's how we got Verizon doing All Together, or Come Together.
Yeah.
And others. I always said before he died, if Michael Jackson wanted to get back in the public graces, sell the rights back to McCartney.
Oh, that would have been a good move, yeah.
And then, you know, he would have redeemed himself in the public's eye, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
So, back on to other things then, you know, life in Missouri is, you know, how is it in Missouri? Because I can't name many people who are like, I'm going to go to Missouri.
No, people don't really come here for vacation. People are usually saying they're going to get out of Missouri. Have you seen Winter's Bone?
No, I have not.
Well, it's a lot like that. Depending on where you live, of course, there's we've got St. Louis, Columbia, Cape, good places to live. I mean, I love Missouri.
What's the love about it, though? Why, you know, can you explain why you love it? Is it possible? Imagine, I'm not dumping on Missouri. I'm really genuinely curious.
That's tough to defend right now. I'm currently working on a new book of poems called Leadwood. And a lot of it is the most political stuff I've ever written, I guess. A lot of it's about what's went on with the lead here, trying to get it cleaned up. For example, one of their solutions, the lead mining company, Doron, their solution, was to spray human waste, feces, on top of the soil that had, some chemicals and stuff in it that would grow this grass over top of the chat, which is spread all over the place here. And chat is just sand and lead dust that was pumped up from the lead mines back in the day. So that was their solution. It didn't work out too well.
I'm just picturing, like, you know, bringing in truck after truck of human waste.
Yes.
Not even like cow manure, which would make sense.
Yes.
But no, just like, you know, bring it in, all right.
Yeah. I don't think they wanted it to be found out that it was human waste, but we did. We found out they got it from
Wisconsin.
Some Johnny on the spot company.
That means that there is a company out there that collects human waste.
Yeah.
for sole purpose of selling it to other people.
For situations just like this, I guess, to try to cover up the lid.
I mean, it's one thing if it's a porta potty company and they're like, yeah, we collect human waste. But no, there's a company, excuse me, can we take your toilet stuff? Can we take your septic tank? Why? You don't want to know.
Yeah. So we've got that, not just here, but I mean, this whole area used to be called the Lead Belt, Herculaneum, all the places around here. We've been number one in meth for years. So what do I love about Missouri? really good people here.
Okay. So it comes down to the people then, and that's what matters.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say that I know many people from Missouri, the Show Me State, except you and a couple of others. And, you know, I would have, based on that very limited sample, I would say that it's quite enjoyable myself.
Yeah. I mean, people here work hard. They don't complain. Maybe don't complain as much as they should, actually. The show me part of the show me say is definitely true.
People just expose themselves.
Well, people can be a little hard headed.
Oh, know? Okay.
So,
is that where it comes from?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The people in Missouri were naturally suspicious, I guess.
Oh, I never knew where the term show me state came from.
Yeah, apparently we would not believe anything unless it was actually shown to us.
Oh, because my brain just thinks of, you know, exposure and indecency. Which I don't really, now that I think of it, I really can't see happening in Missouri.
That's true.
So, you know, Missouri, fine then. So I know that you went away from Missouri, but you came back to Missouri, though.
Yes.
You just can't leave it for some reason.
I always wanted to come back, and when I got a job here, it was the perfect opportunity.
Perfect fit. Well, of course, your family's there as well.
My family's here. I like writing about Missouri. Like I said, I like the people.
It's just, it's your place, it's where you're comfortable, and that's all that matters in the end.
Yeah.
I totally understand. I keep saying I'll never go back to New York, and I won't. I do not want to go back there to live, but I will never argue with the fact that my hometown still has a pull on me.
Yeah. How come you don't want to go back there to live?
The jobs are not there anymore.
Yeah.
It's a dead, dead state upstate. I hate to say it, but that's the way it's been. In my town, IBM bugged out in the mid-90s, and right now, our town just a couple years ago was ranked number one for most depressed city in all of America and least optimistic.
Wow.
We were also number one for obesity, which surprised me, but the depression angle, I totally understood. It's a town of broken dreams now. But when I was a kid, there, just like you were saying about Leadwood, there was a time when there was money.
Yeah.
And for me, that was the last great gasp, was when I was a child in the 1980s. We had a lot of defense contracts, and we had money. Then IBM decided, we're out, we're done.
And it all dried up.
Basically. Now, that's not to say it's completely dead, because the college there, Binghamton University, my alma mater, is trying to become the number one state school in all of New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they're gunning for it. They're expanding like by leaps and bounds. It's frightening what they're doing.
Very cool.
So it's exciting there, but that's really all that's left. Major employer, that's the only one.
How many people live there?
Oh, I don't know anymore. Shoot, man, I'd have to pull up the census info. I know we went down with the last census.
Yeah.
I don't remember how much. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it was still bad.
Yeah.
So you're in Missouri, but you're not in like St. Louis or anything. You're not in the major cities, are you?
No, I'm in Cape Girardeau, a nice college town, right on the river.
Okay, so it's not like St. Louis.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, we're in the southern part. Not quite in the Boot Hill, but getting close, I guess.
Mm. So you're kind of a small town, but not really small?
Yeah. It's your typical college town. I mean, the college is the biggest thing there. But with all that brings, too, you know, a lot of artistic things in the town, a lot of good restaurants. So a cradle of civilization.
It's everything you could want. But it's not too big, and it's not too small. It's the Goldilocks chair.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. I love it there. Yeah.
No, I totally understand. So right now I'm on the Treasure Coast of Florida, and it's this big sprawl of four different cities that are connected by like 30 miles apart. So it just ends up being this long, huge sprawl down here.
Are you a city person?
I'm a little bit of both. It depends. Here, every area's got its problems.
Yeah.
Here there's no public transportation, for example. So you need a car to get around. And it takes you 30 minutes to go from one city to another. And maybe the electronics store that you want to go to is in the same town as you, but with the highways and the amount of traffic and the snowbirds in the winter and everything, it's going to take you 30 to 45 minutes to go to said retailer. Wow. So you end up saying, you know what, the heck with this. I'm just going to order a thing online.
Yeah.
But I mean, the weather's beautiful down here. I miss fall. I admit that. I miss the seasons, but what are you going to do? It's a trade-off.
Like spring all year round?
The way they describe it to me, and I agree with this, is you have summer, which takes place beginning in January to maybe April. So we're in summer right now. Then you have summer amplified, or I forget what it is. I forget what they call it, but that's real summer. That's the hell time. Then you've got summer light, which happens somewhere around November to about January.
Not bad.
Now, it is bad for that 6 months where you die if you step outside for more than 3 seconds.
Worse than Mississippi?
Much worse than Mississippi. In the Delta? Oh, much worse. Because I'm in the tropics, man. I'm not even subtropical. This is full-on tropics here.
Wow.
So, the only time, though, I've ever really had a problem with the heat, like serious problem, was when I visited Key West in August. And there you are. You're practically in the Caribbean at that point.
Yeah.
And just walking around in a late August day, seriously, I had to keep ducking into any bar or any cool place I could find and be like, can I get a drink? Can I just get anything that is wet and cold?
Yeah.
Or else you would pass out. But they're prepared for it down here. They're prepared for that kind of stuff. You walk to a restaurant and there's misters out in front and everything to keep you, hit you. I don't really know what they do, honestly. They just make you feel misty for a second. Don't really cool you off.
Florida was one of the great states for wrestling back in the day before.
It was.
Yeah.
Sarasota.
Yeah.
Is who is it from Sarasota? The big one. I'm thinking of. Because Hogan was Venice Beach, California billed. But he was from Sarasota.
Yeah.
And he's billed as Venice Beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you're a wrestling fan, too. It's interesting you bring that up.
Yeah.
When did you get into pro wrestling?
Oh, when I was a kid. I just loved it. It was something my dad liked to watch, so every Saturday night we'd watch it, and I just fell in love with it. Then I'd like to watch Sunday mornings. They'd have Texas wrestling with the Von Erichs and all those folks.
Ooh.
Plus wrestling at the Chase from St. Louis.
Mm.
And so there'd be a lot of fights Sunday mornings because I didn't want to go to church. I wanted to sit and watch wrestling.
God will understand. I'll beat him in 2-3 falls, Son of God brings out a chair, And the Archangel Gabriel has come down to the ring. Oh, no, this could not be good, as known as God's mouthpiece. And he has that megaphone with him this time. This may be get interesting. I'm going to hell for this.
Wrestling's lost some of its appeal to me, though.
How so?
I don't know. Vince McMahon owns everything, pretty much. And
it is Monopoly at this point.
Yeah, it's just like a secret. I've seen the storylines over and over and over. So.
But let me ask you, because I'm well versed in wrestling, surprisingly. And I tuned out big time during the what's known now as the Attitude Era. That's when I really started getting out of it, was around the time Raw started.
Yeah.
And I just have never fully gotten back into it. But, What do you think about this change from going from this, let's go the most extreme adult borderline NC-17 stuff to suddenly this shift, seismic shift to family friendly again?
Well, I'm of two minds, I guess. You know, I was a kid watching Texas wrestling or whatever, NWA, you had Abdullah the Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
And he would come out with a fork or these little wooden sharp sticks or whatever and just jab him in people's heads. The blood would be flowing. I don't know if it was that fan-friendly back then. I mean, it was WWF was always the fan-friendly or the family-friendly.
True.
And then I was a big fan of NWA and AWA and those places because WWF seemed cartoonish to me, even as a kid. And then you had the Attitude Era where they weren't, and now they went back to their old thing, and it's not as interesting to me.
It may be. Well, I know some names in the current rosters, but that's about it. And I can be like, oh, I've heard that name before.
I'm probably the same way now. I can't remember the last time I sat down and watched Monday Night Raw.
I can tell you the last time I sat down and watched wrestling, though.
When's that?
Probably just recently. I watched on Netflix, actually, the 50-year history of the WWE. And I do pull up old matches on YouTube, though, I found.
Yeah, I still watch the matches on YouTube.
I still watch old ones and go, I remember that guy. I remember that wrestler. Oh, crap, I forgot his name all these years. Totally forgot he was in there.
I'll do the same thing, or I'll look up some great matches that I remember and just rewatch them.
I don't remember the matches so much.
Yeah.
I do remember, you know, I'll remember characters. Wow, IRS, that was Mike Rotunda. And I used to beat the hell out of him. He was my whipping boy in WCW Wrestling for the NES. And I did. Every time I'd pull up Mike Rotunda, and I would just use him as my whipping boy for like 40 minutes, just beat him until he was senseless. I don't know why I picked Mike Rotunda, but he was the one.
Yeah, well, of course he was. He was Mike Rotunda.
He was Mike Rotunda. What are you going to do? But I'll be watching something. I pulled up. I was sick back in January. And for fun, I just, lying on the couch, you want something familiar? I pulled up the old Royal Rumble episodes, the actual Rumble matches.
Oh, yeah?
And watched the first three or four of them on you know, internet video and such. And there were so many people I'd forgotten about that would just come down to the ring. And I'd be like, what the? Leaping Lenny Poffo? Holy.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think he was in one. But I was
Coco
like,
Beware.
Oh, Coco Beware. And
won a match as far as I can remember.
I don't know if he ever did.
Coco Beware would always... Yeah, he's always a face, a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
He'd come down. He was always used to put over the new villain of the week or whoever happened to be. He would always be on the verge of winning, and then he would try that move where he'd throw the person to the turnbuckle, and then he would come running at them, leap toward them, and they would move. He had hit the turnbuckle, and that was the end of the match. That was every Coco Beware match from the 80s.
I might have to start pulling Coco Beware matches to find it and see if your theory pans out.
All right, yeah, it does, trust me.
All right, I'll trust you. Last time I saw him was maybe like 2003 or so, wrestling in Tennessee on a local program.
Oh, yeah, a lot of those old wrestlers still do that.
Yeah, there's a couple of like almost, what would you say, not antique, not relic circuits, but legend circuits.
Yeah.
That they just basically, here, you were in the WWE back in the 80s, and you can go on this circuit now. Because some of them are still wrestling. I know... I think Terry Funk is still fighting occasionally.
I think so, yeah.
I know that Beyond the Mat, they show his retirement match, but I think he came out of retirement to do the occasional match.
Yeah, he's retired several times.
I know that Roddy Piper is quasi-retired, and yet just last month, in January or so, he called out Hulk Hogan and said, you and I should fight at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and he still shows up on WWE every year or two for a little... angle.
They do a Piper's Pit and, you know, trot him out.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that because I still rank him as probably my single favorite wrestler.
Oh, Roddy Piper was brilliant, man, especially when he was young.
He
was great on the mic.
And also a good wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
Actually a good wrestler.
Yeah.
So no, I still love him. There were a few others toward the end of my, you know, I was in wrestling, I'm a young preteen. I loved Razor Ramon.
Oh,
don't
yeah?
know why, but I just always loved Razor Ramon. There's something about him.
He was pretty good. Him and Shawn Michaels gave birth to the ladder match.
Yeah. And then he goes off to, I forget his last name, Scott whatever, goes off to WCW and is largely responsible for the NWO.
Yeah. And the probably the biggest angle in wrestling history.
Yeah. And he's largely the one responsible for all of that. So there's something to be said for him. Who are some of your other favorites that you loved?
Ric Flair is my all-time favorite. Great on the mic. Great in the ring. People see him now. He looks like a zombie, but watch some of his 80s matches. He was, or promos. He was fantastic.
And the Flair flop.
The Flair flop, yeah.
That brilliant move. I mean, he struggled with alcohol. I know that. So, but who else were some of your favorites?
Jake Snake Roberts.
Mm.
Roddy Piper. The Rock in his prime was great. I mean, everyone knows him as an actor now, but he was a great, great heel. Right. Shawn Michaels.
I got to give Shawn Michaels credit for the endurance.
Oh, yeah. He was one of the best in the ring. Always.
It's like The Undertaker. He's still wrestling, and it's the same guy after 25 years.
Yeah. Yeah, they trot The Undertaker out every WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm. To see, you know, to keep this, he's never been beaten at WrestleMania streak alive.
Yeah, he'll be coming out at 90.
Probably. He'll keep trotting him out and see if he loses. Take his cane away.
It's been a 31-year streak. Let's see if he can hold it up this year.
Well, this is WrestleMania 30 this year. So yeah. This is the big one. That makes perfect sense why Piper wants to fight Hogan. And why actually just last week I was reading a report that Hogan is going to be back in the WWE now. He's coming back.
I saw that. Yeah.
That's big news. I didn't pay attention, like I said, in the 90s, but looking back on it, I learned to love Mick Foley.
Oh, yeah.
Came around, I was like, whoa. And not only that, he seems like such a decent dude, a stand-up guy. And I'm like, how can I hate him?
Yeah, and he's a smart guy. His autobiography was probably the best of the wrestler autobiographies. And he actually wrote his. He didn't have a ghostwriter.
Mm-hmm. Is that the one where he talks about, I can't remember which book it is of his, where he talks about his love for Tori Amos?
Yeah, yeah.
Where he has that whole thing about that he uses, I think it's December, or Winter, I think it is, the song that pumps him up.
Yeah.
There were a few I loved. I loved Demolition.
The Demolition?
There was something about Smash that I just loved. And Axe yelling, we're going to kick their stinking teeth in, and then Smash just going, bah.
So you were a WWF fan.
I was, yeah. We didn't have the independent circuits up in New York. That was, you know, I'm 3 hours out of New York City, and that was WWF's home base.
Well, yeah, because New York was an independent circuit, just like Memphis and St. Louis and Florida, until Vince Jr. Started buying all those places out, yeah.
And they had an exclusive contract with MSG, Madison Square, so that's who we had. So we got all of them, and they would come through our town occasionally. They would do a show, and so I went to a number of live shows there, and yeah. It was really cool to see that. But I was a WWF kid all the way, and I still call it the WWF because of that. You know, sorry. Yeah. I wish, though, there's something I do miss, though, and that is, as many wrestling fans miss, Bobby Heenan and Monsoon.
Oh, hell yeah. I wasn't even a WWF fan, and that was a great great team.
I still pull up. I love watching old episodes of Primetime just to see those two go at it.
Yeah. Though, even though I wasn't a fan of WWF, I mean, there were good wrestlers in there. Jake the Snake, Macho Man. And they put on some really good matches.
But the independents were nothing to sneeze at either. There were some good wrestlers in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned the Von Erichs.
Yeah.
You know, dynasty family there.
Tragic, yeah.
Von Erichs. Great, great, you know, things like that. There's so many good, I'm trying to think of some of the other independents. They're just stunning. I mean, you probably have more knowledge than I do when it comes to that.
Every Von Erich except one has died.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
It's tragedy, but... when you talk about wrestling, you cannot list the greats without mentioning some of the names in that family.
That's true, yeah.
It's like skipping over the Hearts.
Yeah, yeah.
You just skip right over, and it's like, no, and you've got to give the props to that whole family. So, yes, very good stuff, though. Yeah, I think there's a part of me that's reconnected with wrestling over the last 3-4 months for some reason. I don't know what it is, but something reconnected with me, at least the old stuff. I don't watch it live anymore, I think, just the old stuff.
Yeah. I do too, yeah. I love to go on YouTube and watch a match or some promos.
There's something about the nostalgia of it, and I can't explain it, that maybe it takes me back to when life was simpler, maybe it's fantasy, I don't know, but I just dig it.
Yeah.
So, there is good stuff out there. Crocker, we're about out of time, man.
Oh, yeah.
Where the heck did the time go on this one?
I don't know,
and there was so much we could talk about still, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was hoping we'd get to comedians, because I know you're a big fan of comedy, too. But...
Oh, you are, too. I mean, we'll just have to have you back on again, then.
All right.
Down the road, we'll have to have you back on. Before we go, though, so how can folks get a hold of you that may want to check out your work and everything? Where can they, like, dig up your stuff?
Oh.
I mean, go ahead.
Well, Amazon.com, I guess. Sundress Publications homepage.
Do you use the Twitter at all?
I do, yeah, at Daniel Crocker, if you want to get on there. I've only got like 50 followers. I could use more. And I don't tweet very often, so I won't be spamming you.
And then you've got, of course, Trailer Park Quarterly, your mag.
Yes, yeah.
At what's the address on that one?
Oh, it's under the Sundress homepage. So if you go there, yes, then you'll find Trailer Park Quarterly.
Under the, and you just dropped a new issue, didn't you?
Like, yeah, issue number 4 not long ago.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. There are some mighty fine writers in there, I think, on this one.
I think so, too. So, yeah, we plan on doing that, trying to do it twice a year now. But when I first started Trailer Park, I wanted it to be the least stressful literary magazine out there. So we just do it whenever we feel like it.
And you've come to find now that actually it's a lot more stress than you thought it was.
It's still a lot of stress, but... But could be worse.
Understood. Well, I encourage our listeners to go check you out, man, because you are one hell of a person, and it is good talking to you, man. I haven't talked to you in a while. It's always good to chat with you.
Good talking to you too, Scott.
All right, you take care of yourself, man.
You too.
And enjoy Missouri.
Well, thanks. Bye-bye.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.